This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, June 15th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, an interview with the wife of Soviet dissident Alexander Solzhenitsyn. She's continuing her husband's tradition of speaking out and is on the U of I campus this weekend. We'll also get a weekend forecast from AM 580's Mike Sola. First, a look at today's news. A lawsuit against Carl and Christie Clinics claims they agreed to limit treating new Medicaid patients in order to pressure the state for faster and higher Medicaid payments. The suit filed in Champaign County asks a jury for civil penalties and damages of up to $1 million from each clinic, plus damages to people who say they were harmed by the alleged practice. The suit claims that Carl and Christie conspired when they started refusing new Medicaid patients in 2003. The two clinics employ about 90% of the doctors in Champaign County. The state attorney general's office claims many rejected patients had to go without care or endure long waits at the only clinic that still accepted Medicaid recipients. And that clinic, the Francis Nelson Health Center, had to eventually stop adding new patients. It also charges that Medicaid costs rose because patients resorted to emergency rooms for treatment. Carl and Christie say they made their decisions separate from each other. An Oswego man whose family was found shot to death yesterday in northern Illinois left a state police office early this morning after hours of interviews with investigators. State Police Master Sergeant Cheryl Lisi says there have been no charges filed and now Christopher Vaughn is not a suspect in the killings. 34-year-old Kimberly Ellen Vaughn was found dead yesterday along with her three children, 12-year-old Abigail Elizabeth, 11-year-old Cassandra Ellen, and 8-year-old Blake Phillip. Their bodies were in the family's SUV on a service road near the Will County village of Shanahan, that's southwest of Chicago. Christopher Vaughn was treated for a gunshot wound to the leg. A man sentenced to death for the fatal shooting of a police officer in Muncie, Indiana in 1990 has been executed. Michael Lambert was pronounced dead at 12:30 this morning at the state prison in Michigan City. He was convicted of killing Officer Greg Winters with a concealed gun after he was arrested. In Illinois, state budget talks are over for the week, and there's been no movement toward a compromise. We got an update from Sean Crawford.
Once lawmakers went past their scheduled adjournment date at the end of May, it became clear putting together the new budget would take time. After all, Republicans who are in the minority are now needed as it takes additional votes to pass a spending plan. But most expected the governor and legislative leaders would at least be talking about the state's finances. Only two meetings involving all the top people took place this week. Another was canceled. House Republican leader Tom Cross points out there's only a couple of weeks to go before the end of the fiscal year.
So we're getting closer and closer to a July 1 date. We don't want government to shut down, and we are committed to make that not happen.
3 years ago, Illinois approved a smaller one-month budget to make sure the state could pay its bills and send out paychecks to employees for July. Some lawmakers are already talking about a similar scenario if there's no budget deal soon. I'm Sean Crawford.
No issue at the state capitol this year has been as contentious as electric rates. The rates for some consumers skyrocketed in January, and despite many calls for relief, Illinois lawmakers have taken no action. A private meeting yesterday appears to have been a bit more productive. Although no one's offering details, legislators and utility executives sounded positive as they emerged. Senate President Emil Jones says it was a major step forward.
These issues can be resolved with reasonable minds, and we made substantial progress.
Jones says additional meetings will happen as there's more negotiating to do. Jones and the utilities have opposed previous calls for a rate freeze, saying it could bankrupt electricity providers Commonwealth, Edison, and Ameren. It's unclear if a rate freeze is part of the discussion. Legislation that would allow local governments the use of quick-take power to purchase land near Curtis Road in Champaign is now on the governor's desk. The measure that passed the House yesterday would enable the communities of Champaign, Savoy, and Champaign County to seize property while taking advantage of a federal grant for the development of the area near I-57. The $5.6 million grant stipulates that governments own the rights-of-way by the fall of next year. Senators approved the bill last month. The House co-sponsor, Danville Republican Bill Black, says he decided to support the bill after gauging public support for the Curtis Road interchange.
This is not something that should be used very often, and it isn't. But I usually don't vote for them, but everybody I talked to in Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy said, well, sometimes you have to do this for the greater good, and we just don't have time to wait another year to negotiate.
Senate Democrat and chief bill sponsor Mike Frerich says the project is long overdue. Local governments can currently use eminent domain powers, but that often involves a lengthy court process. Quick Take still allows landowners to settle on a fair price for their property in court. Police on the University of Illinois campus say they're encouraged by a decline in campus crime, but the assistant chief, Jeff Christensen, says the community shouldn't have a false sense of security. Robberies went down slightly, with 39 from September 1st of last year through mid-May. Those and other crimes were mostly in areas adjacent to the campus, particularly an area to the northwest, and most occurred overnight. Christensen says a couple of campus-wide alerts after robberies that occurred last spring may have helped as well.
We put out a public safety bulletin, and that helped because that increased people's awareness. You know, the awareness, we like to have them all the time, but I think people were a little more cautious in where they're walking and walking with groups, and especially people were more willing to call in suspicious behavior, and that helped us out.
Campus police reported 30 aggravated assaults and batteries in that time, but that was partly due to a change in the criteria for reporting crimes. There were 80 such incidents reported a year ago, but those included minor injuries to victims or police or both. Christensen says other peer institutions only report assaults and batteries that include weapons or somebody being hospitalized. For the latest newscast online, go to will.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. Russian author Alexander Solzhenitsyn is the subject of a three-day forum at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. At the age of 88, the author of The Gulag Archipelago rarely leaves his home near Moscow, but his wife and two of his sons are taking part in the forum. AM 580's Jim Meadows talked with Natalia Solzhenitsyn about her husband's work since he returned to Russia.
For criticizing Soviet rule, Alexander Solzhenitsyn spent decades of his life either in prison or exile. When he returned to Russia in 1994, his sharp criticisms of post-Soviet Russia's social problems weren't welcomed by much of the political and literary establishment. But his wife Natalia says that's changing. In her keynote address to the U of I Solzhenitsyn Forum, she said her husband's views are earning wider acceptance. And earlier this week, Solzhenitsyn, who once refused an honor from Russia's first post-Soviet president, Boris Yeltsin, accepted a state prize for humanitarian activity from Russia's current leader, Vladimir Putin.
Mr. Solzhenitsyn, I wanted to ask you about your husband's receiving the state prize on Russia Day, and that was it just 2 days ago that you were in Moscow at the ceremony?
Yeah, it was 2 days ago on 12th of June.
Both my husband's and my impression were that the fact that a state award was being given to him for investigating and highlighting awful periods and awful stretches of our history gives hope that such events will never be allowed to happen again.
The news accounts I saw talked of your husband speaking with President Putin. Did he have anything particular to say to him about Russia and the state of the country?
Yes, Solzhenitsyn did speak about the things both in domestic and in foreign policy in Russia that worry him, and he got substantive answers in return.
Can you be more specific about some of the concerns that your husband has today about Russian?
I prefer not.
I wanted to ask, your husband is writing today. He continues to be active. Can you tell me anything about what subjects interest him right now?
Yeah, he's writing, and it's great that he still can be. He right now is working on the finishing of works that, for various reasons in his life, he had gotten short shrift that he had not been able to finish.
How far back in his life do these works go, as far as when he first started or conceived of them?
During the periods of his more mature life forced him to, for example, write the Gulag Archipelago, and it put some of his projects on the back burner. Those are ones he's getting back to now. These, for the most part, is being able to write in smaller, shorter form.
You had talked in your speech about, in your husband's commentaries on Russian society, about getting the cold shoulder at first, at least from one part of Russian society, from commentators and people on top. Do you see that changing now? Do you see a greater interest in that segment of the society and what your husband has to say?
That segment of society has indeed gone through many changes that the times themselves almost called for, and they're sort of closer now to where everybody else was all along. Basically, life itself convinced them that the questions that Solzhenitsyn had been posing earlier were relevant and had to be the questions they had to address.
Natalia Solzhenitsyn, talking about her husband Alexander Solzhenitsyn, with translation from her son, Stefan, a Moscow urban planner. They, along with another son, Ignat Solzhenitsyn, a conductor and pianist, are taking part in a Solzhenitsyn forum that continues through Saturday at the University of Illinois. While Mrs. Solzhenitsyn declined to comment on what her husband said to President Putin, Russian news agencies quoted Putin as saying the author spoke of the need to support small business and the middle class. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
We see the return of the word rain to our forecast, but it's only in the form of an isolated pop-up thunderstorm or two in some spots as the weather gets a bit more humid. AM 580's Mike Sola says for today across the two-state area, it'll be partly to mostly sunny with a few isolated thunderstorms, mainly in central and southern locations, and highs today between 87 in northern Indiana and 94 in southwest Illinois. Mostly clear tonight with a few isolated thunderstorms possible, mainly in the evening in northwest Illinois. Lows ranging from 58 in eastern Indiana to 67 in northwest Illinois. And for tomorrow, we begin the weekend with sunshine, an isolated thunderstorm or two mainly in northwest Illinois, and highs between 88 and 94. A humid high of 91 in the forecast for tomorrow for Champaign-Urbana, sunny and 92 Sunday, sunny and 93 on Monday. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Friday, June 15th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, agricultural programming, and other helpful information on our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.